You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello, and welcome to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is Indie Wrestling Radio. I am your host, Jordan Sly Fox, and with me today, Mr. Around the Ring himself, Floyd Johnson Jr. What's up, Floyd?
Hey, what's going on? I'm looking forward to talking about some wrestling. I just watched day 4 of the G1 a few hours ago. I didn't get to finish it because we started getting busy at work during the last two matches, but I'll finish day four a little later today.
That's what's up, man. Dude, you know what? Sidebar real quick. My favorite thing about when we do the show together is that you're like a professional, man. Like when you listen to professional radio, whenever someone's introduced, they go right into, you know, what they're doing for that day, or, you know, they go right into talking just like you do. Like, I've had, you know, in the past, I've seen people where they're just like, hi. And then you're like, so what's up, man? Like, not much, man. You? And it's just kind of weird. You know what I mean? But like,
yeah,
you need to be on like radio somewhere, man. Like you need to be, I know you got the very successful podcast, but like, you need to be like nationally syndicated, like, you need to be on Busted Open Radio in New York City. You know what I'm saying?
If someone wants to pay me to talk about wrestling or sports in general, I'm down.
Well, I just mentioned your successful podcast. Let's talk about it for a second, man. Tell me and everybody else where you can find it. What your latest topic was? Give me some info.
Okay, so it's Facebook.com and Twitter.com. It's Around the Ring OK. That's what we do. Or you can email us any questions you have at aroundtheringok@gmail.com. We record on Sunday. We generally upload it Sunday about noon. But like this week, I actually worked on that day, so I didn't get to upload it until Monday. But this week was, I called our Nation of Domination show, because it was me and three of my friends from high school. So literally, I'd known each person that I was talking to over 20 years. So we used to sit in the cafeteria and go at each other. It didn't matter the topic, you know, football, basketball, whatever, wrestling. So I just wanted to do a special episode where people just kind of got in on our conversation. And it was very relaxed, and a lot of people actually enjoyed it. So, yeah, if you want to go ahead and check that out, it does have a preview of the Extreme Rules, so you can see how wrong or right I was. But, yeah, it was fun to do. It was a change of pace. Normally, it's me and my friend Silky Dave. But next Sunday is his last episode, so we're going to be breaking in a new co-host, my friend Ryan Aaron. So that'll be fun. If you jump in now, you'll get to see the transition from Silky, who usually does the hosting, to me, who will be doing the hosting. And we have an Around the Ring Hall of Fame. That's one of our segments, and I definitely do the best of the best, and we're kind of the kings of the top five. That was like our most consistent segment for a long time. So this week we're going to do three different top fives, because that's like Dave's favorite thing to do. So saying goodbye to him, we're going to do a top five show.
Well, that's really cool, man. And, you know, I know I've said, I think you've been on the show 4 times now, if I'm not mistaken. And every time you're on the show, I always tell anyone out there that, you know, is tuning in, that I listen to your show on a regular basis. I absolutely love it. And I'm telling the truth. Like, I love it. Two of my favorite shows, two of my favorite indie wrestling podcasts right now is Around the Ring with you, and then the Spies and Benchmark show, which is a video slash podcast show with Chris Spizik. So I love those two indie podcasts. Talkamania is another good one. You know, there's just there's a bunch, but like y'all's two show is like the your show and Chris and Silky's show. That's actually a different Silky than the one that has been your co-host for a long time, believe it or not. But those two shows are two of my favorite indie podcasts. So please, anyone out there, go check them out. Show them some love. Like them on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter.
And we are now on Spotify, so you can follow us and listen to us on Spotify.
What? Who is your... Are you with Podbean?
Spreaker.
Spreaker. And they get you on Spotify, huh?
Oh, yeah. You had the option. I put it in early May, and I mean, it just got on the page at Spotify last week, and to the point where I forget we're on Spotify because it literally just happened.
Well, that's a good one to be on. That is, for anybody out there that doesn't have a podcast, Spotify does not accept shows from every host site. So Spotify is kind of that one where, you know, it's kind of like, oh yeah, those guys they're legit, they're cool, they're on Spotify. You know what I mean? So.
From what I understand, you've had to have certain amount of plays, certain amount of downloads, certain amount of episodes. You can't just start a podcast on Tuesday and be on Spotify. From what I understand, maybe it's wrong. That's just how it was explained to me.
I got you. I know that Going In Raw, which I don't have you. Do you listen to Going In Raw?
I do not.
Okay, well, it's a great show, and I would not call them an indie wrestling podcast anymore. They both guys do it for a living. They have 3 to 5 shows a week. They have numerous paid sponsors. They make a comfortable living doing the show, and more power to them. Like I want to get to that level where I'm making that much money doing the show and stuff. But anyway, it took them a while to get on Spotify. And you're talking about guys that when they do, like they did a live stream watching, I can't remember if it was a G1 Climax episode or if it was just it was something. But anyway, it was like 3 a.m. and they were doing a live stream where they were watching wrestling and talking to some listeners at the same time. And they had over 1,000 people watching it live with them, you know, like on the live stream.
I'm going to definitely check that out.
Yeah, they're great, man. They're all over. I want to say they got close to 100,000 followers on Twitter, you know, really, really awesome. They're really cool guys. I've got to talk to them a couple of times. I share political views with one of the two hosts. His name's Larson. Actually, both of them. But I've got to talk to Larson a little bit about his political views, and he recommended me some political podcasts that I could check out. So it was really cool. But anyway, I was texting you while I was cooking breakfast this morning, and I asked you if you wanted to talk, if I could pick your brain a little bit about the G1 Climax. It's G1 Climax 2018. I assume that means it's the 28th one. You know, I was telling you.
It is the 28th one.
That makes sense. I was telling you after I asked you that, I was like, yeah, don't be, or pretty much don't hate me for asking, you know, like dumb questions. You can tell I'm in my infancy, like I'm very new to the New Japan world. So for anybody out there that's not privy to everything that New Japan does, do you want to talk about real quick? Would you like to explain what the G1 Climax is and what the, you know, just tell us all about what it is, what you accomplish, how it's structured, all that.
All right, so it's basically, the best way to explain it, it's New Japan's version of the World Cup. So you have pool play, and then the winners of the pool play play each other, you know, wrestle, winners of the pool play wrestle each other, and they are the G1 winners. So in this case, this year it was 20 people. You had 10 people in each pool, pool A and pool B. So everybody wrestles everyone else. So it's 9 matches per person. 2 points to win, 1 point to tie, 0 points if you lose. So at the end, so it'll be each show focuses on a different block. So they have block A one night, and they'll have five matches, five singles matches, and then all the people that are in Block B will be in like tag match, the preliminary tag matches before, and then it reverses the night after. So you get there's 18 shows in the pool play. That means, as you can see, nine matches for each person in each block, and then you have the G1 final, and the winner of Block A and the winner of Block B fight, and the winner that wins the G1, they get the pretty trophy, and they get a certificate to cash in. It's like Money in the Bank to cash in their title match, but it's not like Money in the Bank where they can just cash in any time. They basically have to name their shot, pick their show. Usually people do it at Wrestle Kingdom, which is the January 4th show, the name of the January 4th show, which is New Japan's version of WrestleMania.
Oh, really? So last year, because Naito won it last year, and he faced Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. That is why he was in the main event against Okada, because he won the G1 Climax?
Correct. So, like, as far as I know, the last two people who have won, which are Naito and Kenny Omega, both lost to Okada at Wrestle Kingdom.
Wow.
So, like, where you get the guaranteed win if you're in the Money in the Bank, it's not guaranteed if you're, especially with Okada as champion, because he was a champion forever.
Yeah, he set the record, right?
Yeah, set the record. 12 title defenses. And that should tell you how special a title defense is in Wrestle Kingdom. He's been the champion for over 2 years, and he's defended his title 12 times.
That's insane, man. That's absolutely insane. So if you had to pick five matches, your five favorite matches from this year's G1 Climax, where would you rank them? Which five would you rank, rather?
All right, so I actually sent this to you a little earlier. The first one was the B block. The B block, to a lot of people, is the strongest block. That's with Omega and everyone in it. That's who was on this morning. Omega and Naito were the main event of night one, and I gave that 4 3/4 stars, so I had that almost as a 5-star match. So that's the one you can't miss. Okada and Jay White. There's a lot of discussion back and forth on the IWC on whether this was a classic match or not. I'm actually a fan of character work, and Jay White's really good at character work, so I gave it a solid 4. I also gave Michael Elgin and Adam Hangman Page, I gave them a 4 for their main event. Then that will be 3. Elgin and Evil. I just think Elgin works his ass off, so he's one of my favorites just to watch, especially in the G1, because he treats every match like he's in the final. Like, if you watch him, there's a different intensity to his matches. And then the last but not least, actually a few matches can be in here. I put Juice Robinson and Tonga, Tama Tonga, but it could have been Juice Robinson and Ibushi from this morning. I also had really fun watching a Tomohiro Ishii and Yano match. It's just sometimes, you know, matches might not be the classically worked, but you just have a really good time watching it. That's what that match was.
I dig it, man. I absolutely dig it. Do you know when Tama Tonga and Kenny Omega are going to meet for the IWGP heavyweight title? Is there any plans for that right now?
It's not any plans for that now. Their match is, I believe, Saturday the 21st. I think that's what I told you.
Yeah, that's what I messaged you this morning was asking.
So what's going to happen is, if Tonga beats Kenny, then there's a show. The next big show after this is it's not Destruction. The next big show, I believe, will be that there's another California US show, and that would probably be the best place to do it, because the Bullet Club is big in America, so that's probably where it'll happen.
I dig it, man. I absolutely dig it. Last question. If you had to pick one New Japan... Well, actually, I got two more questions. If you had to pick one New Japan wrestler, they don't have to be in the G1 Climax, and it's if you had to say that this person was your favorite wrestler in New Japan right now, would it be Michael Elgin or would it be somebody else?
Minoru Suzuki.
The reason I asked about Elgin's because I know you've told me before that he's one of your favorite and you absolutely love his work, so I didn't know.
So him and Suzuki are my favorite. The hard hitters are more my favorite. I mean, I like Kenny Omega. I like Okada. I recognize that they are the best. But as far as what I like, Suzuki's like really sadistic and uses a lot of submission moves. And I just love his, you know, I like his character work. And Michael Elgin, it's just every match, it seems like he's trying to get 5 stars.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. He, one of the coolest things I've seen, you might know when this took place because I don't remember, but I was watching the match of him and Kenny Omega, and when Kenny Omega was doing the gun with his fingers and going bang while Elgin was on his knees when he's signaling that he's going to do the running V trigger, and Kenny or Michael Big Mike grabbed Kenny's arm and put his he's doing a gun with his hand, so Elgin grabs Kenny Omega's arm with both hands and puts the gun up to his forehead and is yelling, "Do it! Do it!" Do you remember that?
Yes.
That is freaking awesome, man. That was absolutely awesome. I loved that. Well, all right, man. I had one more question for you. If you were a betting man, who would you, and you had to put $100 of your own money down, who's winning the G1 Climax?
All right, so I'm in the voicesofwrestling.com G1 pool.
Oh,
I'm
actually okay.
Out of 800 people, I'm tied for 36th place right now, so I'm pretty happy about
that.
Wow,
that's good.
My money's on Jay White.
Really? You think star is going to be born?
Yeah, they've been pushing the hell out of him, and he has gotten so much better. His character work is amazing. He is completely different than anyone in New Japan, and he's more of a American style heel. American style win at all cost heel.
Absolutely.
And with them trying to get into America, they're gonna have to, you know. They don't have to completely change their product, but they can add a little few more Americanized themes in there, and I think he's going to be it.
That's pretty cool, man. I dig that. That
I have
pick.
Him beating Naito in the final. That's what I have right now.
Really? And Naito's in the B block, so Jay White's in the A block?
Correct.
Gotcha, man. Well, that's cool, man. I would love to. I'll probably be picking your brain for the rest of the day. I know you work nights a lot, so you might be taking a nap today. So, whenever you're not, I'll probably be picking your brain about some random New Japan stuff because I'm still trying to learn about New Japan every day, you know. But let's get on over to our SmackDown review, my friend. So, what did you think about SmackDown? This is Thursday morning, so it was actually 2 days ago now, or a day and a half. What did you think about the last SmackDown?
Thought it was an excellent show. I gave the overall grade. I gave it a B+. But I honestly thought it was a very entertaining show. They set the storylines in motion for SummerSlam, and we got some good stuff. We got some good in-ring action. I thought it was good. That was a good show.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Sorry, I was bent over reading some notes from the show. I was the first match. I'm jumping ahead, but. I really loved the Andrade and Almas versus AJ Styles, and I know we're going to talk about it in a second, but I just wanted to ask you real quick, do you think if those guys were given 20 minutes and just unleashed, do you think that they could potentially have a match that would rival the 6 and 7 star matches we've seen from Kenny Omega and Okada?
They would have to be given a little more creative freedom than they had. I believe they've wrestled in New Japan.
Oh, they did.
What was his name? I always forget what Andrade's name was before. But when Andrade, he's the founder of LIJ.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, AJ was the leader of the Bullet Club at that time. So I believe they had a few matches. I might be wrong, but because that was before my New Japan time. but they seem to have a really good chemistry. And yeah, I think if given the right amount of time, yeah, they could definitely get in. They could definitely do five stars or better. Andrade has already done a five star match with Johnny Gargano.
That's right, he did, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, man, that was a great match too. We should cover that sometime. Like halfway through the match, I think he hit the running knees, and it looked like it was over, like maybe 10, 15 minutes in. And then Gargano kicks out, and then the match goes like another 12 or 15 minutes. Like, it was unbelievable.
That match was really, really well done. I really liked how it happened, and how they wrapped it up was genius.
Yeah, I agree. So we start off SmackDown today. We see some highlights from Saturday's screw job by Shinsuke Nakamura on Jeff Hardy. Shinsuke hit Jeff Hardy with a low blow while the referee was not looking. He ends up winning the U.S. title. So we fast forward to SmackDown, and the show starts off with highlights from that, followed by Jeff Hardy making his entrance. Dude, it kind of creeps me out every time I see Jeff Hardy in that full-on makeup with his eyes closed. Because he does it himself, or he has eyes drawn on his eyelids. You know what I mean?
So, that's more of, and it's kind of funny because he's been getting more into the paint. That's more Brother Nero than Jeff Hardy. Brother Nero is the character that usually is opposite Broken Matt. So I've always liked it. I think it's really cool, and he's really artistic that way. And so one of my friends doesn't like eyes, like eyes kind of creep him out, so he has a hard time staring at Jeff Hardy when he's made up like that.
That's funny. that would kind of creep me out too. Like,
yeah, then he cut like the worst promo ever. But Jeff Hardy,
yeah, what
not
was
alive.
Up with that?
Jeff Hardy's not a live audience promo guy. He's a backstage promo guy. So it's like, let him do the pre-recording stuff. It was just, he was supposed to convey a feeling and get the crowd pumped up, but no one was feeling what he says, to the point where he has to yell, "Have a good night, whoa," to try to get the crowd into it, because he just basically let out a dud of a promo.
Right, right. Basically, in that dud of a promo, you know, he just talks about how he's heartbroken because he lost the U.S. title. He said he wants to render Shinsuke Nakamura obsolete. And he actually had in the white contacts. That's a Brother Nero thing too, right?
Yeah, that's a Brother Nero thing too.
Sweet, man. So after that, we see AJ Styles make his entrance. They go to commercial, would come back, and Andre Cien Almas and what's her name? Zelina Vega. They come to the ring. Sorry, I was grabbing my coffee there. We record in the morning time, so it's a true morning show, you know? But anyway, they come to the ring, and I'm not going to break down the entire match, but I thought for the 12 minutes they were given, AJ Styles and Almas put on one hell of a match. What did you think about it, man?
I did. I think they put on one hell of a match. It was a great, you know, he had the matches with Sin Cara, but I think this was really his introduction to the main roster. This was really his introduction to SmackDown's audience, that he is a threat, especially with Zelina Vega, and especially with Zelina Vega being in his corner. And I think this match did a good job of announcing himself.
I agree. I totally agree. AJ Styles is working. I believe it started during the commercial break. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I think he started working over the leg a bit during that long commercial break where you just had the match up in the top left-hand corner. Eventually, AJ catches him in the calf crusher, and Almas taps pretty quickly. I wanted to read this short paragraph from 411 Mania. I was reading their review this morning, and I just wanted to review. They gave it 3.5 stars to start with, and then they wrote this little overview paragraph. And it said, "This was overall a very good match, with Almas getting in a lot before finally losing. If Almas had to lose, at least it was to Styles in a quality outing. They also didn't give too much away in case they revisit the feud later on. I thought that was that sums it up really good, don't you think?
I say that too. It was like sometimes they just give you a little appetizer, give you a little taste, and you realize, well, if they had about 10, 15 more minutes, they really could have told a story.
Right?
Yeah.
So next we see Aiden English walking backstage, and he gets about 6 steps in. He runs into Lana. He apologizes. He says that he can't take back the mistake. He knows he ruined Rusev's chance. His entire career was leading Rusev's entire career was leading up to this one moment, and Aiden English failed him. And it cuts to Lana, and I don't know if you noticed this, but the first sentence she said
was in normal language with no accent. And then it seems like she just kind of turned on the accent. It was weird.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly. For some reason, I was thinking maybe it was accent at the beginning, and then it trailed off. But it might have done the opposite. I can't quite remember.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was like no accent in the first sentence, and then it picked up.
Huh. That's weird. Well, anyway, yeah. I don't know really what they're trying to do. I kind of take it as they're trying to slowly transition away from the accent, and they're just going to have her be Lana or CJ. You know, I assume they're keeping the name Lana, not going to CJ, her real name. But, dude, I think that's kind of, I don't like that. And I'm not just talking about from a kayfabe standpoint, because that's bad enough, just taking off her accent like that. But that's what makes her so cool and different, is that she has the Russian accent, man.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, it's like you've seen her so much and you watch her on Total Divas, which is what a lot of people in the wrestling industry watch, and she doesn't use it on there. That's why I was saying she should. That's why I've always thought she should drop it.
Really? Yeah,
because you have a wildly popular show. Sometimes Total Divas outrates SmackDown and Raw. So you have this wildly popular show, and you know, in on that show, you don't do the accent at all. And now on the wrestling, you do the accent. And it's just like, okay, you can drop it. It's okay now.
I got you. Well, that makes sense. I mean, I don't think that's I mean, that makes, hearing it that way, that makes more sense of why she would drop it. But I still in the camp that's, to me, that's just kind of what makes her different. I
definitely, because it's a throwback to Rocky IV. I love that. As soon as I saw it the first time, I was like, okay, this is Rocky IV, and Rusev is Drago, and she's Bridget Nielsen, and I get it, and I love it, and it's just one of those things. As soon as she went on the show, I can, you know, it kind of didn't feel right anymore, because you know she does not speak like that.
I think you're the first person that I've ever met that also knew who Bridget Nielsen was. I think you might have been. How cool was that, dude? Did you like her in Beverly Hills Cop 2?
I did.
Yes, me too. My favorite is when she has that really short hair in Rocky IV, though, and she's wearing the not the pantsuit, but the skirt suit, you know, just like Lana does. Like, Lana's like you said, it's like spitting image of her.
Yeah,
as far as like funny character, you know.
Yeah, her and Sylvester Stallone were like married for a cup of coffee.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is that she's in that movie?
I think it was like less than a year. I think that's how long they were married.
Is that why she was in that movie, or did they meet making that movie?
I think they met making the movie.
Huh. I wonder what happened. Wonder why they didn't last, man. Anyway, because I would have made it work, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was gonna say, because he probably got tired of having a woman that was a foot taller than him.
Yeah, because he's actually pretty short, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like
5'10".
Yeah.
Oh, man. Next, we see Becky Lynch versus Mandy Rose. I actually kind of like this matchup. I didn't like the match. The match lasted 3.5 minutes. But if they, you know, this is a, and this might sound a little weird, But Becky Lynch to me is like that good looking female wrestler, but she's like kind of tomboyish, and you know, she's like trains MMA and stuff. And then you have Mandy Rose, who is like, you know, look at her and you're like, oh, that's a, I hate to use the word girly girl, but she's very feminine in the sense that, you know, she likes strutting around in her short shorts and like, you know, she's very prim and proper, it seems at time, and like the characters clash. You got the really feminine girl and the tomboy girl. Does that make sense at all?
Yes, that absolutely makes sense. It's Becky Lynch just seems like the girl that you set up and you play video games with, and you talk about cartoons and all that stuff, and then it's like, oh, she's like your best friend, and all of a sudden you start dating. Mandy Rose is the one you got to put the work in.
Yeah, I get you.
You got to take her. You got to take her to Cheesecake Factory a few times and spend more money than you got to impress her. You know,
you got to hit that credit card, don't you?
Yeah, you got to hit that credit card.
Yeah, you hit that credit card and pick up that OT shift. Yeah, dude, that's such a funny way to put it. I'm totally stealing that. Becky's that girl that you're chilling with, watching TV, you know, watching the ball game with.
Yeah, and then next thing you know, oh, you're my girlfriend? Oh, I didn't even know.
I love it. I absolutely love it. So anyway, the match went 3.5 minutes, and Becky Lynch hits the exploder into the disarmer for the win. You get a promo from Becky afterwards. She says she loves winning. She's just getting started. She's coming for Carmella.
That straight fire's coming for you.
Yep, yep. You see Paige meeting with Carmella, and she praises Becky. Carmella ends up talking about how she's beaten Charlotte and Asuka twice, and wants another Mellabration. Do you remember the Carmella
yes.
celebration, the Mellabration?
I do.
Anyway, Paige agrees. If Carmella beats Becky next week, she in a non-title match, then she gets her Mellabration. If Becky wins, Carmella will defend the title against Becky at SummerSlam. That's not too convoluted. I kind of stuttered a couple of times there, so it might have sounded worse than it was.
That's exactly what happened. It's just, and you know, you're going to get some James Ellsworth nonsense next week, and that's going to be a fun match.
Yeah, speaking of that, Paige did describe James Ellsworth as Carmella's boyfriend. Remember, she goes, how is your boyfriend, James? And she goes, ew, gross.
Yes.
Next.
And it was funny, because when James Ellsworth got released or whatever. Uh-huh. He said she was dating Big Cass the whole time. It was just a joke because, you know, he was standing kayfabe. It was hilarious.
That's awesome. It's a video or?
It was just on Twitter. It was a tweet. I'm a big James Ellsworth fan. I follow him. He's going to be at All In next month. I can't.
James Ellsworth's at All In?
Yes. And anytime the WWE signs you, if you had bookings, like where you've taken money or whatever, yeah, they don't make you cancel them.
Yeah, WWE tells you to honor them.
Yeah, they tell you to honor them. He was all in. He is working all in. I cannot wait to meet him. He's probably one of the most people I'm most excited about meeting.
Yeah, man. If you I know I've done it where he'll have he'll be on Twitter for like half an hour and he'll say, you know, hey, I'll answer any questions that you have, and people tweet in questions and he answers them. And like, he's just like, you can tell in his short and sweet answers, he's not like Randy Orton where, you know, like if it's a stupid question, Randy will act like you're stupid or give you a stupid answer or something like that. Like James Ellsworth is so cool, man. You know, like they were like, one of the questions, this was after he had already left WWE and before he came back this time, and one of the questions was like, are you ever going to come back to WWE? And he was like, man, I sure hope so, because I had the time of my life there. Like, just, you know, just a really humble, down-to-earth guy, you know?
Yeah, I would love his book. If he was to do a book, I would love it, because he was in the wrestling industry toiling, toiling, and toiling for lots of years, no one knowing who he is, running a small little company, taking the jobber jobs, you know, with the WWE, just showing up and losing, and then he became who he is. And I was just like, I mean, that's just all about perseverance right there.
Good for him, man. I'm going to read more about him because that's really cool to hear. I knew that he was in there for a long time. I knew that before the I say this, one of the things that he had to cancel, not because WWE told him to, but just because WWE needed him at an event. But I believe he was supposed to main event a House of Hardcore match, the Tommy Dreamer Fed. He was supposed to main event that in a tag team match with Tommy Dreamer as his tag team partner. And I just always thought that was so cool for a guy that spent years in the business, and you know, 6 months before he got the WWE contract, you know, like I bet he thought it was just the coolest thing that he was going to main event an indie show teaming up with Tommy Dreamer. And then he just gets a rocket strapped to his ass, and he, all of a sudden he's in the WWE wrestling the world fucking champion, bro.
Yeah, they just gave him a live mic and said, basically, say, it really doesn't matter what you say, just say something. And he said the line to any man with two hands has a chance, and he got over with one line. I think that should be the name of his book. I got over with one line.
Yeah.
The James Ellsworth story.
Now, after that, though, he left for a few months before they brought him back, right? Or did they immediately continue using him, WWE, that
They is? Brought him back like a couple few weeks later, if I remember correctly. I am horrible with times.
Okay.
So I don't know how long it was.
Do you remember why they brought him back?
Oh, just people loved him. It was just this big... He got cheered, and they were like, okay. So this came, but they brought him back to lose to Braun Strowman again.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, what kind of, so it was to Braun Strowman again?
Yeah, and they lost to Strowman again, and it was just like, okay. And then someone called him a troll, and I remember him being on SmackDown just trying to get a job. So, like I said, it was just like one of those things.
I think it's absolutely great, man. That is... You know, I want to see everyone that enters into the wrestling business succeed. And, you know, I bet, I don't know how much he was making per match, like what his price was to say, travel 2 hours to wrestle, you know what I mean? But right. I guarantee you know, it's hundreds, if not thousands of dollars now per match. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I definitely know what you mean.
And I'm so happy for him. You know what I mean? Because like, you know, I know, you know, I work in wrestling, so I know that, I know of a guy that I've worked with, that's not a former world champion, but he was in the WWE for a very considerable stint. He's still in phenomenal shape. He's not old. He's only in his late 30s, early 40s, but he gets paid a couple grand a match to show up. Now, of course, you know, he signs autographs, he sells shirts, and he does interviews and stuff. But for an all-day event, he gets paid $2,000, and that includes the match, right? Well, James Ellsworth, and he's been well, and that guy has been out of the WWE for several years. Whereas, if you look at James Ellsworth, you know, he's just recently out of the WWE. Well, he's back in now. You know, and he was a hot commodity. He had 3 wins over AJ Styles. He's got like some, I think he's got 95,000 Twitter followers, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, he's a hot commodity, I guess you would say, you know?
Yeah. He definitely is.
I just absolutely love it, man. I just think, I know I'm harping on it now, but, you know, just good for him. We'll leave it at that. Just good for him. Next, So we see R-Truth, I guess, making his return. Any idea where R-Truth has been? Has he been injured or something?
He was hurt. Yeah, he was hurt.
Okay. Well, anyway, we see him go up backstage, and he says something to Ty Dillinger. Ty Dillinger gets all irate and says, oh, I will beat his ass. I can't remember what Ty Dillinger said. Do you?
He's like, you're going to try to motivate me? Well, I'm going to go out there and I don't need the motivation. I'm going to go out there and fight him. And then you find out R-Truth wasn't talking to him. He was on the phone.
Yeah, he had a Bluetooth piece in his ear. I actually thought it was pretty funny.
And he's like, don't mess with Samoa Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, what a bad person to mess with, right?
Yes.
So next we get Samoa Joe and Ty Dillinger. The match lasted less than 2 minutes, man. What is what is your thoughts? And it's okay if you think they serve their purpose, but what are your thoughts on so many matches on a wrestling show being less than 3 minutes, man?
That match served its purpose, but I've been honest. I even in the world of wrestling, you need parity. You don't need to make anyone look bad. I think most matches should last 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah,
especially like on Raw where you have all that time. On SmackDown, I can kind of see it. You only have 2 hours, but like this show was heavy in the backstage segments and stuff like that. So I kind of see it, but it's like 2 minutes. I mean, it doesn't even let you like get into the match and it's over.
Right, right. How many WWE live events have you been to?
100 plus.
Are you shitting me?
If you think about it, I've been to WrestleMania 7 times, and on a given WrestleMania weekend, I go to 3 to 5 shows. I usually go to WrestleMania, like Raw or whatever. I've lost track long ago on how many shows I've been to. I've been to, I think, like 25 just pay-per-views.
Oh my God, man.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. I had no idea. Anyway, I was about to tell you that I've been to two. But anyway, so I've been to Monday Night Raw twice. One back in, I had to look up the date. I want to say it was in 2010. It could have been early 2011, but I think it was during the build up to WrestleMania 7, I believe, which it was the WrestleMania that The Miz beat John Cena in the main event. That was 27, right?
Okay, yeah.
Isn't that because Rock and Cena
was 28, right? Because The Rock and John Cena were 29 and 30, so I think that was 20. I don't remember.
Okay, well, you're probably right. You're probably right. But anyway, it was, for sure, it was, because it was during the buildup of The Miz and Cena. So whatever WrestleMania that was.
It was 27.
It was 27. Okay. What date was that? What was the date on that? Was it April
2011? Let's see. Not seeing it. Hold on. I just wikied it real quick, and my internet decided to start moving slow.
Well, it was during that build. It was building up to that match, and you know, they had a bunch of short matches, but the dark match that night was like a 10-man tag that included Cena on one side and The Miz. I don't know why I was trying to blank. The Miz on the other side. And, I mean, the dark match went like 20 minutes. So they really end you on a high note, at least for Raw and at that particular one they did. And if I remember right, the CM Punk was there and he was in that match as well, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I know he was, because I kind of fell out of my wrestling fandom for a while. And I remember seeing CM Punk, and he cut a promo, and it was just amazing. And I was just like, oh my God, that's, you know, I see this guy, he's well built, you know, he's all tattooed up, and people are booing him, and he's just relishing in all these boos and everything. And I was like, oh my God, I love this guy. And if I was smart, I would have went and applied at a wrestling academy that next day instead of waiting till 2 months ago.
So, to make you a little jealous, because I know you're a big CM Punk fan.
Yeah.
June 30th, 2008, CM Punk won his first World Heavyweight Championship on a Raw. Do you know what city that was in?
That he won his first title?
World Heavyweight title.
It was in Oklahoma City, right?
It was in Oklahoma City, and I was in the building.
Oh, so jealous.
So my friend Anthony was like a section over. So I'm a big CM Punk fan. But I was like the only person I knew that liked CM Punk. Like, seriously. Wow. And like his fandom had not caught on yet. So he had one Money in the Bank, and Batista came down, beat up Edge, and he came and cashed it in. So I'm in my favorite section, the 100 section. I come out, and like in the middle of the floor, just like, ah, CM Punk, and just yelling as loud as I can to, like, I forgot who was with me, but they kept, all they said is, like, every section was staring at you. I went completely nuts when CM Punk won that title.
That's really awesome, man. Actually, during that time frame, I had fallen out of my fandom, like I just mentioned. But I did remember, CM Burnham, one of the best, if not the best, wrestling commentators in the state of Oklahoma. And he works for, God, he's probably worked for every promotion in the state and some. But anyway, not too long ago, we were talking, and I told him how much I love CM Punk and, you know, about how looking back at some of his old stuff is what really give me the drive to getting clean and sober and living without pain pills and alcohol. And he was like, yeah, man, won his first world title in Oklahoma City. And I was just like, how cool is that, man? So I've remembered that. That wasn't that long ago when he told me, but that's the reason that I knew that.
I just got some breaking good news.
Uh-oh.
It's been my lifelong dream. To meet Arn Anderson. He's like one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Probably he's in my top two or three. It changes depending on the day. He just got announced for All In.
Oh,
he will be at StarCast.
Dude, if you are able to get his autograph, I will buy it from you.
I will definitely get his autograph for you. I have this Four Horsemen print, where I have Ric Flair's signed it.
What?
And now Ric Flair signed it, and so it was the Horseman with Ric Flair, Tully, Arn, and Barry Windham. So Tully and Arn and J.J. Dillon are going to all be there, so I'm going to have them all sign that. So I'm very excited.
Well, we're going to definitely talk about that off the air some more, and then we are definitely going to do some episodes with you on the build-up to All In when it's getting closer and more matches are announced, and maybe we can even do some call-in stuff while you're there. I know my co-host, Mike Moore, Marvelous Mike, is also going to All In, so maybe y'all two could, link up while y'all are there. We can do some recording stuff, and I can even do some stuff with Around the Ring if you need me to record some stuff for you, like of you calling in, you know what I mean? If you want to give a report and stuff like that for you to put on your show whenever you get back, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, just a thought. Anyway, let's finish up the old SmackDown here. So my favorite segment of the night is, let me just make sure that I said this. Samoa Joe, I said that it was less than 2 minutes. He choked Ty Dillinger out, right?
Yeah, choked him out.
Yeah. So next, the Miz hosts Team Hell No's funeral. And This is my favorite of the night. So Kane's mask was on a mannequin, and it was being wheeled out behind the Miz. It was absolutely awesome. He gets in the ring and he cuts a promo talking about how they're dead. You know, it talks about how he even says that the Miz even says that Daniel Bryan's return has been lackluster or something like that. Do you remember anything else that he said?
Yeah, lackluster. They didn't catch the chemistry. It was crazy. It was pretty spot on. Everyone I know that will just really liked it. He's like, oh yeah, you've kind of said what the whole rest of what everybody's been saying. But I can't remember the exact words, unfortunately, because I've slept and watched wrestling since then.
My favorite thing that he did, and he actually got a pop from the crowd, is he somehow segued into, he made you think that you were going to say one thing, and then he goes in and says, He says Miz and Mrs., which premieres next Tuesday directly after SmackDown on USA. And he actually got a pop from it, man. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, he's super, super over. It's like one of those things he has to try really, really, really hard to be a heel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you know what's crazy is he doesn't work as a face. They tried to push him as a face for about 6 months, and it just didn't work. And so it's just like he gets cheered when he does bad stuff, and he gets no reaction when he does good stuff. So
right,
he just has to be him.
Yeah, absolutely. Has he ever worked? Because I know I sound like a broken record, but I fell out of my wrestling fandom for several years. So stuff like this, I don't always quite remember, even though it's probably been told to me. But has The Miz ever worked as a face?
Yes, he worked for a face about 6 months to a year. I can't even remember. Like I said, I'm horrible with times. I would say it'd be about 3 or 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't a heel. He was using Ric Flair was like his manager, and he was using the figure four, and he was pretty much a face, and he was getting no reaction.
And okay, none. So even though he was working as a face, it wasn't working.
Yeah, it wasn't working. I mean, he's one of those people that the only way to make him face is for him to just still be a dick, but kind of like, well, I'm a dick to help people be better, you know, that kind of thing. Like, kind of like the New Day. No, it was kind of like the New Day. The New Day were heels, right?
Right.
They didn't stop doing anything they did, and then all of a sudden they were face.
That's pretty funny.
They started doing the same, they was doing the same cheating thing, same three on numbers game, but they were face. And it was just like, it was like, you don't really understand why they're being cheered. And I'm like, they could do something similar with The Miz if they wanted to.
That's actually really funny. You said that Ric Flair was actually managing him?
That's when he started using the figure four. Ric Flair's like, I'm passing the figure four to you or something. It was like one of those like small storylines.
I got you.
I honestly can't even, like I said, I'm horrible with times. Like, when people are like, well, this happened in 2007, I'm like, okay.
I can tell
you everything about the gimmick, but for the life of me, I couldn't tell you when it happened.
I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it, man. So to talk a little bit more about the funeral here, I pulled up the 411 Mania review for SmackDown, and I just came to the funeral portion, and I was gonna read about what they said. So let me just read this here. He missed the mark by not having an urn with him. Miz is subdued, but quickly promotes his new show debuting next week and his MVP performance in the Celebrity All-Star Game. What a spectacular asshole. He praises Kane and Bryan as a great team, but noted that they are horrible friends. Miz mentions Kane early. Kane nearly ended Bryan's career and says that the Bludgeons ended them as a team. He asks for a moment of silence and then says he told us so. He then mocks Bryan for failing once again, calling him a sad man. The truth is Bryan's return has been a bust and he's done nothing but destroy his legacy and his career is dead. Bryan arrives attacking Miz from behind and starts suplexing the pallbearers. Miz runs and Bryan kills a pallbearer with a busaku knee?
Yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, I don't know. I just call it the running knee.
The running knee. So Bryan kills a pallbearer with a running knee and points at The Miz. And this says, this was a segment that could have been horrible or Russo-rific, but Miz was really a grade A asshole here and made it work. He's completely unlikable. Good stuff. I completely agree with that. He's completely unlikable. Good stuff. I love The Miz. I can't praise him enough. He was he's the reigning Rolling Stone Wrestler of the Year. I mean, he's just, he deserves, does he or does he not deserve one more run with the world title?
He deserves one more run with the world title. I think he deserves a real faction. Like, I think he would play a great Ric Flair in a faction of people. And I wouldn't call it the Horsemen or anything.
Right.
Now, or the Mizdarage. But if they really wanted him to, like, make Ric Flair, maybe put him, I've always said, like, the Miz, the Revival, and maybe Mojo Rawley, because he's kind of could be the bigger muscle guy. You put them all in suits and come out, and I think that'd be money right there.
That is such a good idea. That is such a good idea. Let's fantasy book that just real quick. Let's put someone else in there besides Mojo Rawley, because I love the Revival. If there was one other person besides Mojo Rawley that's a singles competitor that you could see in there, who would it be?
See, he's too much of an alpha, but if I was just going based on what I like, my size type thing, I would put Drew McIntyre in there, but he's way too much of an alpha. He just wouldn't work. He's like a future world champion himself.
Yeah.
So let's see. I would have to think of somebody. I would probably put Baron Corbin.
I could see that. I could see that. I would also like to see him, even if he had the Revival, let's say no Revival first. If he got three guys called up from NXT and they come in and they're his henchmen, similar to the Shield as CM Punk's henchmen, but it be more Four Horsemen like, where they hang out, they're all in suits together, you know?
Yeah.
You got to make them dominant like the Shield was too. They can't come in and be, you know, just shit. You know, just be total shit the whole time. It defeats the purpose, man, you know?
Yeah, and it's just, you have to have the mindset. You have to have the 80s mindset. You have to protect the Miz. Like, let's say he's the champion. Like, you pretty much have to go through all the rest of them before you finally get the Miz. Like, the Miz, if it was me, the Miz would only have singles matches at pay-per-views. It would be a big deal for him to defend this title.
I like it.
But, because it's kind of like what they're doing with Brock Lesnar, but way better.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see it. I think Miz should be the one that beats Brock.
I've been behind as Seth Rollins as the one to beat Brock. I've been by Brock for a long time. I think Seth Rollins, I've said it for 2 years that he should be the face of the company.
Yeah, so you want Seth Rollins to do it, but who do you think realistically is going to be the one to dethrone Brock? Roman?
Oh, Bobby Lashley.
Oh, you think it'd be Bobby, not Roman?
No, Bobby Lashley. I mean, WWE's tired of ending their shows with a monster amount of booze. They're just tired of it.
I mean, so, you would hope so, but I mean,
So if they had WrestleMania that ended in booze, so you want to end SummerSlam that's in New York.
That New York crowd is going to eat Roman Reigns alive.
Exactly. So you cannot end that show with another smattering of booze. It has to be Bobby.
I hope so, man. I really do. Next, we see Eric Young from Sanity taking on Kofi Kingston from The New Day. Excuse me, I got the hiccups. I thought this was a very solid match. It went 9.5 minutes, and Eric Young won by pin. It was a good way for Sanity to kind of keep up the little momentum that they got, and it's kind of like a snowball. They're just kind of gaining and gaining, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and this was the underrated workers match. You know, Eric Young, he's a great worker, but, you know, he'll never really get the credit he deserves, and Kofi Kingston's the same way. They've been putting on great matches for years, and they finally got to work together, and it was a really good match. I love Eric's
Wheelbarrow neckbreaker. Yeah, yeah. I love it. I don't. What does he call it? Do you know? Does he have a name for it?
All they called it on the show was Wheelbarrow neckbreaker.
Ah, okay. After that, I was going to say, at the very least, I know it wasn't a WWE, but it still is considered a world title, or at least it was at that time, I believe. But Eric Young at least always has the, he'll TNA. Always be able to say that he is a former world champion. You know what I mean? I know there is a lot of people out there. Bruce Pritchard from Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard being one of them. I don't know if you listen to that show, but he says he's very adamant about the fact that, you know, hey, titles are a gimmick. You know, they're a prop for you to use. But I would argue against that. I know Bruce knows far more about wrestling. He's way more famous, and he'll always have, you know, I'm sure he's got a straight line to Vince McMahon to at least talk as friends. But I would argue against that, and I know many wrestlers would argue against that as well, just because, you know, you being the world champion, a former world champion, a current world champion, that at least shows at one time, you know, you worked hard and you proved yourself where they would at least trust you with being the face of the company, basically.
Yeah, you're the face of the company, and when you're asking for money after you leave the WWE, I guarantee you, you say I'm a former world champion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, so it's like one of those things. They are gimmicks, but when done right, the gimmicks matter.
Absolutely. Look at Ric Flair. You can't tell me that he's not proud of those 16 world titles. You know what I mean? Whether they were 16 worked events or not, like, you know, he's proud of it, you know? And I'm sure Eric Young is proud of his TNA world title run as well. Back to SmackDown. Next, we see the U.S. champion Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy actually wins this by DQ, but it actually went 18 minutes. What did you think about this main event?
I thought the match was really good. And someone said this on another show that I was listening to, and it was the show called Top 5. It's from Pro Wrestling Sheet. I wanted to give credit where credit's due, because they pointed out something, and I didn't really see it. This was his best match since he's gotten back. Best singles match since he's gotten back.
Jeff Hardy?
Yeah, because yeah. I think he's been... I personally found out he was hurt. So I thought he'd been like trash since he got back. Last night, that match night before last was really good.
Yeah, I agree. I think he has been he's been very lackluster, even with a U.S. title run. He's been pretty lackluster. But this right here, you really see how good and how talented Jeff Hardy is. You put him in there with a quality opponent in Shinsuke. You give him a story. And he executes it to perfection, you know?
And one thing that they did is Shinsuke was on top most of the match. And all Jeff was having to do was sell. And I think that suits him more to his strength.
Yeah, I completely agree. That was the main event. They brawled at the... I was just going to read this one little part. They brawled at ringside. Randy Orton's out and he kicks the shit out of Jeff and stomps his head onto the steps, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Orton says that Jeff will have to wait and find out why he did what he did. I think he tried to rip off one of his earrings or something. And then he throws him over the announce table. Orton, he did the draping DDT as well. I thought he did something else, but if you think about it, this is what I was wanting to say before we go, was that you can tell that Randy Orton is being serious about this heel. I don't know if it's a heel turn or a continued heel run. When he left, he was a face, right? He was getting cheered, walking out slow, saying, "I don't give a crap what you think, Bobby," talking about Bobby Roode and stuff. He was a face, right?
Yes, but he is a preferred heel. He's always been a preferred heel.
Right, right. I agree. You know? And he, right here, I think this is a serious heel turn that he's doing, because if you think about it, he hasn't, these last two or three times he showed up, he has not hit an RKO. And that's what the fans are waiting for. That is a face, that's a face finisher. And, you know, he's not doing it. He's not giving the fans what they want. And I think that's really cool. What about you?
I completely agree. I've heard so many people say that in this day and age, if you want to be a heel, there can be nothing appealing about you. You can't even like when people were like, they were hating on Jinder Mahal because he was doing a lot of rest holds and stuff like that, and they was like, that's how a heel today has to work, because work rate is looked at so importantly. If you keep putting on your heel and you keep putting on amazing matches, you're in essence turn face because they're gonna start cheering you.
Yeah, I agree.
Happened with AJ Styles. AJ Styles never turned face. He was an asshole. He kept putting on great matches. So when he come out and he'd say, I'm the face that runs the place, all of a sudden fans just started chanting it. And he didn't have to turn face. He just quit cheating.
It's so true. That is so true, man.
So, if your work rate is high, it is really hard to be a heel.
I get you. I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, that is the show, man. That's SmackDown, anyway. What did you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Oh, definitely thumbs up. Like I said, I had it at a B+ on the old WWE scale.
I think you had Raw at a B+ as well, right? So good week.
Yeah,
for...
I think it was a good week for wrestling. I think anyone that is realistic about what the WWE product is and what they try to present every week, this was a good week of wrestling.
I would completely agree with that. There's been a lot of down weeks, in my opinion, in, let's say, the last 6 months, but this week right here was a solid week. I know every time you and I are together, it always seems like I'm bitching about, you know, all these matches that are under 3 minutes, under 2 minutes, but you pointed out a very good note that the Ty Dillinger and Samoa Joe match, for instance, really served a purpose, so it probably could have even been shorter if it needed to be. Overall, I think it was a great week for WWE, and I haven't even watched NXT that came on last night. Have you watched it?
I have watched it. I enjoyed the show. It was a really good show.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, Floyd, tell us one more time, where can I find the show? What's the name of the show? What's your social media looking like? What do we got?
All right. So, Around the Ring, it's simple. If you go on Twitter or Facebook, it's Around the Ring OK. You can catch us on Spreaker. You can catch us on iTunes. And we are new to Spotify. Listen there. If you go to our Facebook page or our Twitter page, we're running a contest where Around the Ring needs a new tagline. You know what? If you're the person that wins, you get a free shirt from either Pro Wrestling Tees or WWE.com, and we'll ship it to you anywhere you are in the world. And just listen to us every Sunday.
I love it. I absolutely love it, man. And for everyone out there listening today, don't forget, follow us on social media. We have a new Twitter handle. We have a new Facebook handle because we have a new name. In case you forgot, our new name is Indie Wrestling Radio, and our Twitter handle and Facebook username are the same thing. It is at IWR Daily. That's initials for Indie Wrestling Radio, IWRDAILY. You can search that on Facebook and Twitter and find us. We're also on Snapchat at IWR Daily. Same thing on Snapchat. You can also follow me on Twitter, and you can follow me on Instagram. That's at FoxThePodcaster. I always love to hear from people on social media. I love getting to talk with people on social media. That's actually, I have a good friend named Darren that lives way across the pond that listens to the show regularly. I love Darren to death, and that's actually where we met. He tweeted one day talking about the show, and that was probably 4 months ago, and, you know, I've talked to him on a regular basis. A lot of times before I put something on the show, if it's something different and unique, I will actually get his viewpoint about it, because he can look at it objectively. He's a big wrestling fan, and he can look at something objectively and tell me, like, yeah, that's not really something I would listen to, or that is something that I would listen to. And you know, he's not just, you know, he's just a really cool guy. So I love to hear people, love to hear from people on social media. I know Floyd does too. That's actually where me and Floyd met. We got to talking about wrestling on social media, and the next thing you know, we're doing shows together. So, Floyd, I just want to say I appreciate you from the bottom of my heart coming on, man. You always teach me something new every time you're on. I can't wait to go to a wrestling show with you in the next couple of months. And I'm going to message you here shortly, and we're going to talk some All In here in just a bit, my man. All right?
All right.
All right, man. So for Floyd and myself, everyone out there, stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?